You're listening to an audio guide to ancient Rome. Each episode in this series gives you the history and a short tour of a site in the Eternal City, in the hope that you can make the most of your visit. For a map of the locations covered, go to rome-podcast.com. My name is Darren Green, and in this episode I'll be describing the Theatre of Marcellus. The theatre was named after Emperor Augustus's nephew, Marcus Claudius Marcellus. However, the building was originally commissioned by Julius Caesar, who bought and cleared the land in a space to the south of the Field of Mars, amongst a cluster of temples and next to the Tiber. A temple to Diana and a temple to Pietas had to be demolished to make way for the building. When visiting the site, you will see there are also the remains of a temple to Apollo to the north, immediately next to the theatre's curved colonnade, and three temples to the southeast. In the order moving away from the theatre, these were dedicated to Janus, the two-faced god of boundaries and beginnings, Juno Sospita, Juno the saviour, and Spes, the goddess of hope. All of these temples are at least 190 years older than the theatre. Notably, neither Julius Caesar nor Marcellus were alive at the time of the theatre's opening. Caesar had been assassinated, and Marcellus had passed away from an illness, and the task of completing the project had fallen on Augustus. The naming and official opening took place 10 years after Marcellus's death, in the same year that Augustus dedicated the Ara Pacis. Marcellus was the eldest son of Gaius Claudius Marcellus Minor, a former Roman consul, and of Octavia Minor, sister of Caesar Augustus. Marcellus, the emperor's nephew, married Augustus's daughter, Julia, in 25 BCE. Thereby becoming also his son-in-law. He served under Augustus in Hispania, alongside the future emperor Tiberius, and was elected to a magistrate's office at a very young age, an honour Marcellus celebrated by sponsoring extraordinary public games. His rapid rise to public office and close ties to the emperor are said to have brought him into conflict with Agrippa and others. This promising career was cut short when Marcellus died in 23 BCE at the age of 19. At that time, an illness was spreading throughout Rome, and first Augustus and then Marcellus would succumb. The emperor recovered, but the illness proved fatal for Marcellus, who passed away in Baiae, most likely at the imperial villa. Marcellus was the first member of the royal family whose cremated remains would be placed in the mausoleum built for Augustus. His mother, Octavia, built a library in his honour, and the entrance facade to this is very close to the theatre and can be accessed by following the pedestrian walkway that links the Temple of Apollo to what is known as Rome's ghetto area, on Via del Portico d'Ottavia. Augustus's fondness of his nephew was expressed in his moving funeral oration, and in both naming the theatre and including exquisite funerary statues of him, including one in which Marcellus is depicted as Hermes Logios. In ancient Greece, Hermes was usually represented as a mature man, bearded and dressed as a traveller, herald, or pastor. However, when depicted as Hermes Logios, he was shown as a young, athletic figure and lacking a beard, something that for Augustus, Octavia, and the rest of Rome would have strongly echoed Marcellus at the time of his death. The architecture of the theatre had a significant influence on subsequent buildings in Rome and across the empire. For example, the design of the facade was reproduced in iconic buildings such as the nearby Colosseum and the amphitheatre in Verona. In particular, the theatre structure had a curving double colonnade decorated on the outside with three orders or styles of columns. Two of these are well preserved in the lower levels. Although now missing, the keystones of the external archways of the colonnade were decorated with ornately carved masks, consistent with the tradition of Greek drama, that were used by actors to show expressions of smiling or frowning. The general layout of the theatre is partly recorded in the Severan marble map of Rome that shows the portion behind the stage, which seems to include two shrines for the displaced temples to Diana and Pietas. The stage wings each had a basilica, and there was a series of supports surrounding the upper tier to accommodate the velarium, an extendable sail that could be deployed to shade the audience. Something that would have been necessary given that this was an open-air theatre and the seating faced the afternoon and evening sun. The theatre was 111 metres in diameter and was the largest and arguably the most important in ancient Rome. It is thought to have been able to accommodate more than 20,000 spectators. It was mainly built of tufa and concrete faced with stones in the pattern known as opus reticulatum. This simply refers to a pattern of diamond-shaped tufa bricks covering a central concrete core. Although you can't see it here at the theatre, you are very likely to see this recognisable pattern in various buildings throughout the city, where the underlying building core is exposed. For its opening, Augustus commissioned special games and festivities. As part of this, he had a golden statue of his nephew wearing a golden crown brought into the theatre and seated on a traditional Roman curule chair in amongst the dignitaries that had arranged the celebrations. The theatre's proximity to the river meant that the route of the city's triumphal procession needed to be adjusted. Instead of going around the building, it would be redirected to take advantage of the new facilities and passed in front of the stage and in full view of the theatre's audience. It is likely that Caesar's original design had to be adjusted to accommodate this requirement, something that was achieved by widening the gap between the stage front and the seating. Augustus was the first to implement a permanent seating law that dictated where people of different social class were allowed to sit. Those with less influence or less money were required to sit in the highest tiers and would enjoy only simple wooden seating. The lower tiers had stone seats and a more intimate view of the entertainment. For four centuries, the theatre provided a venue for plays, dramas, poetry recitals, and celebrations. However, it gradually fell into decline as the empire faded, and Christianity gradually took over as an influence in the city. In the 11th and 12th centuries, the Pierleone family fortified the theatre as part of their defences between Tiber Island and the Capitoline Hill. It was subsequently turned into a palazzo, and then separated into a number of apartments. The next major change for the theatre came when the Italian dictator Benito Mussolini opened up the surrounding area as part of his new Romanità. This was a fascist propaganda effort to justify right-wing extremism by drawing on Italy's great heritage and specifically the might of Imperial Rome. By the early 1900s, like many of the ancient Roman buildings, the theatre had become crowded with piles of old ruins, shops, shacks, and slum housing. Archaeologists had undertaken some exploratory digs at the beginning of the century, but given all of the overlaid structures, it was difficult to ascertain what remained of the original theatre. Mussolini ordered the area completely cleared to allow the building to be renovated and restored to a recognisable state. Clearing the site and widening adjacent roads displaced most of the occupants of the theatre to other parts of the city. By the end of the excavations in 1932, over three quarters of the facade had been revealed, the barrel vault had been cleared, and iron gates installed. Today, the building is used as a combination of private apartments and offices. However, there is good access to view the remains of the outer colonnades.